Too late good, I like food. Too late good, you see burgers, we can fight. Too late, I need a rubber side. Too late good, what type of food? Got my way or all they do. I like food, food is good, I like food, food is good. Crimson dying back and eating. I like food, food is good, I like food, food is good.
Hi, my name is Kevin Matthews, and due to intense peer pressure and the fear of missing out, I have protected myself from Tyler and Dave by finally catching up with Chucky!
Yay!
Hey, nice. Surprise! Nice. There have been 4 episodes, right?
Yes.
Right, thank God I'm up to date.
Yes. Is that it? I thought there was more.
I thought the Chucky thing was enough. It's good.
Are
enough
you enjoying
me.
It so far? I mean,
I didn't have anything to add to the praise that you guys really said. I'm loving it, and I wish I hadn't waited so long to dive into it. So it's bloody awesome.
Nice. I'm Dave Gray, and this week I learned it's cold. Scraping ice off a car is cold in the morning. It's cold. And it's only going to be cold for 5 months now. I hate winter.
I'm Tyler Hosley, and I also hate winter. But on the plus side, it's a really Tyler-centric week here on the podcast. And we also got a brand new Limp Bizkit album just a few days ago. I'm just fucking shooting dust at this point. And this is Raiders of the Podcast.
Yes.
Yay!
Who knew that it may not have been the album anybody wanted, but kind of turns out to be the album some people needed. Yeah. 2021. It's a fun album.
Oh, it's getting really good reviews too. Shockingly.
That's how the Nine Inch Nails album dropped last year was. That double album was amazing. I needed it. It got me through. I don't judge anybody for needing Limp Bizkit to get through. Not this year. Other years,
It's totally. A short album, though, isn't it? Is that about, 35 minutes or something, T?
Yeah, I think it's, 33 minutes long.
Yeah.
Pretty short.
Wow.
Definitely their shortest to date. Although, no, the Inquestionable Truth was probably their short. No, this might be their shortest. Pretty close, though.
Have you ever actually lived through a winter, Tyler? I mean, Florida doesn't actually have winter, so.
I've been up north in extreme winter, but I've never lived through it. I've been in I was in Chicago during the winter time for 5 days.
Okay, we'll take that. That'll count.
It was awful. It was awful, and I never want to experience it ever again. But
didn't even get time to acclimate. I'm sure that was hell.
It was awful. Awful. Yeah.
I'm sorry.
No, I survived. I barely, but I survived. I watched the new version of Dune, and I absolutely loved it. I don't want to say too much because I'm definitely going to pick it for the show down the line, along with the David Lynch version. But I'll just say this. I was very happy with what we got, and I can't wait for part 2. And because I promised Kevin, I watched Baby Oopsie, which is shockingly better than Puppet Master Axis Rising. I mean, don't get me wrong. It's still pretty fucking terrible. But it's got some charm, and it's goofy enough to work on a terrible modern Full Moon level. It's pretty violent and bloody, which surprised me, and it's competently made overall, which is the exact opposite of any of the post-Puppet Master 3 Full Moon movies. I expected a lot worse, actually. And for what it is, I didn't outright hate it. You can do a lot worse, and I would even recommend it to people that like Full Moon stuff, so that's probably the most shocking thing this week that I enjoyed. So, yeah, Baby Oopsie is not that terrible. I mean, it's terrible, but it's not. It's entertainingly terrible, so not terrible.
I forgot I'd put that on your plate. On the plus side, I did know that it probably, hopefully, wasn't going to be stitched together from, 5 other movies.
No, it wasn't Puppet Master Legacy, which marketed itself as a new Puppet Master movie, but it's all clips of the old Puppet Master movies surrounded by a wraparound story. But yeah,
they've done that before, haven't they? Full Moon, I think they did an Evil Bong like that, and and at least one or two zombie, they've made the same zombie stripper movie 6 times.
They did,
yeah. And then I think there's one that is just the other 5 versions edited into a new movie.
I think the only good zombie stripper movie was not from Full Moon, though, and it was the one with Jenna Jameson and Robert Englund. I really enjoyed that one back in the day. But I don't really remember a lot of it, but I remember enjoying that one more than any of the zombie stripper Full Moon movies.
You know, so I closed out October with Fright Night, which is my all-time favorite vampire movie. I know other people's miles may vary, but I adore it. Especially for 80s vampire movies. Maybe the only one that comes close to it for me is Near Dark. But besides that, I didn't watch any movies because October, I usually go so hard that I get really burned out. And I had three movies, one of which specifically designed to cause me pain. So I spent the rest of the week, you know, indulging in things that make me happy. I watched a lot of Deep Space Nine. I needed it. So I'm going to make enemies with Scott Adkins this episode. And, you know, when it comes to it, he will win. He will fucking murder me. And, I respect that. And besides that, I watch Chucky because Chucky's great. Yay.
I can't remember what I ended on with my horror viewings. It was a bit of a mixed bag. But what I did was, now, I don't want this to sound wrong, but because of our busy schedule, I kind of get the horror viewings done, and then I'm straight on to the next selection, obviously, because life goes on, and the wheel of time trounces us all and chews us up and spits us out. So it was time to get into some noir for some Noir-vember. But again, try and mix it up. So I rewatched Basic Instinct, which is just awesome. I think it's great and perfectly pitched right in the middle of the complete trash and the polished end product. Like I genuinely think whenever I watch it, by the time I get to the end, I always rate it better than when I started it, which is partly to do with everyone just acting well in terms of with the material. Now, if you took those performances and put them in different films, you'd get very different results and hate them. But with the material, it all works. And a big part of it is you've got the Jean de Bont cinematographer, Jean de Bont, and that Jerry Goldsmith score is superb. It's so lush. It's a pull to that. I watched Kansas City Confidential, which I'm going to guess Dave has seen. And you can tell me.
I have.
Yeah. I mean, I really liked it. It's kind of, it's like, you know, unfussy, low key, doesn't aim to be either more than a solid little crime flick, but it works really well in terms of, you know, it doesn't really show the crime. It's about the aftermath and the guy who's wrongly picked up by the cops and going on the chase. And again, that is helped by a couple of other things, mainly the faces of Jack Elam and Lee Van Cleef. Jack Elam's kind of the epitome of someone with a face best suited to radio. But I know that's a horrible thing to say. He's also like a wonderful character actor who just like, you know, picked some great roles and was always good to watch. So I really liked Kansas City Confidential. I don't know if it has a kind of really good reputation or if it's a little unrecognized one generally amongst film noir fans. How do you think it's rated, Dave?
I'm not really sure. It's just not one that I've discussed with many people. I enjoy it. I agree with you. But it's not one that's ever gotten like a really good release. It's not usually like, I think it's like right there, because there's the big pack of the big ones. And I think Kansas City Confidential usually is like right tagged on at the end. Like if you were to write the best noir books. It'd be like, you know, Double Indemnity and some Sam Spade stuff and Kansas City Confidential. It's a really good one, but it's not viewed as the top tier. Which
I think that's fair that it's not top tier, and the kind of potential romantic subplot shoehorned in is the weakest part. So they do that, whereas they could have, I think, streamlined it even more to focus on the crooks and the shenanigans. But I really liked it. I thought all of the performances were good. And last but not least, because again I loved it, I had a long overdue rewatch of Collateral. And it's, much like Basic Instinct, I get through Collateral and at the end I'm like, why did I leave it so long to revisit that one? It's a fantastic film. I think the Cruise is brilliant in it. I like Jamie Foxx in his role. There are some decent supporting players popping up, especially as targets of Cruise's hitman character. Yeah, I mean, it's just superb stuff. Do you guys like Collateral?
I love it.
I haven't seen it since the theater, so I don't really remember much of it.
I mean, that nightclub scene still bangs. I have to say, it's just quality Michael Mann cinema. Brilliant. I forgot Mark Ruffalo's in it with a slick hairdo, being like a sort of cliched kind of, rough around the edges cop who senses something's amiss. And what you will dislike, Dave, is it's another acting role with Peter Berg. Peter Berg's in this as well. So as much as you may dislike his films behind the camera, maybe overall it's better to have him behind the camera than in front of it. But it's fantastic. It holds up really well as a top film for like quite a few of the people involved. That was it. We'll see what other film noirs I get to through the month. I might even make you guys watch one or two. Not sure yet.
Andy, do you know who did awesome with film noirs this month? The streaming service.
Oh, don't. Are you gonna? Really? Have you got criteria there?
I was. They literally put up Robert Mitchum playing it cool, and it's, you know, Robert Mitchum playing it cool. So good.
I mean, I've got so many. I know I checked some of the titles with you. I still haven't really dived into those indicator box sets that I've had for a while, thinking they'd just be lush. Some other Samuel Fuller films. I've got loads to choose from. And then I think for me with film noirs, unlike a lot of other films, when you find the stuff that's buried away on, say, Netflix and Amazon Prime, you can still find the stuff that it's not great, but I think you have less terrible film noirs than, say, terrible cheap zombie movies or terrible found footage films that you find all over the streaming services.
Yeah. Criterion also put up a bunch of Fox noirs. I'm not rubbing it in, just pointing it out for anybody listening. They're really worth checking out. Country did a fantastic run of noir that just does not get any credit is Mexico in the 40s.
Ooh, interesting.
So I'd butcher the titles right now. I just can't think of any offhand because, you know, I didn't prepare. I never prepare. But Google Mexican noir in like mid 40s during the lull when, you know, the U.S. was in World War II and they didn't make so many. Mexico had like a real, real vibrant rush of excellent noirs.
I'll see if I can track some down because, you know, as I don't think I did it last year, but whenever I do Movember for my own benefit, I also like to, you know, try and find as much variety in there. So there's neo noirs, there's film noirs. I did you can get horror and what sci-fi and all these different blends. So yeah, it's good to just go through a wide spectrum of where that style can go in those tropes.
This week we watched the 2020 black comedy American crime film Zola, the 2020 American dark coming of age comedy Dinner in America, and fucking Stone, the 2014 3D action fantasy film The Legend of Hercules.
You can just go first if you want to get out.
I'm gonna go first. I'm not starting with Legend of Hercules. No. I'm gonna hold off. I'm gonna force Tyler to describe Legend of Hercules because That's the kind of friend I am. I'm kidding. Kevin can do it if he wants. I'm gonna talk about Dinner in America. Directed by Adam Rahmeyer, who directed The Bunny Game. Everybody knows The Bunny Game. We covered The Bunny Game. I still have a terrible taste in my mouth from The Bunny Game. Follows a singer seeking to escape the police and a young woman obsessed with his band who he unwittingly takes refuge with. Anyway, basically it's a very punk rock romantic comedy, and it is pretty fucking good.
Oh.
Okay, the first 20 minutes are a little rough. I mean, I get what they're going for, but it's a little too try hard. It's a little too, you've seen this in other movies. But when they finally get the two lead characters together, it absolutely comes alive. Kyle Gallner is excellent. I mean, absolutely excellent. It's, you know, we watch a lot of movies, and a lot of movies you watch and you're like, oh God, this movie is trying so hard to be cult. This movie is going to be cult. It's literally just a matter of time. Gallner's performance is probably like all the edgy movie kids in American high school today probably be listing Kyle Gallner's performance as their all-time favorite until they're like 70. It's excellent. He's charismatic and magnetic. And when he's allowed to do different things, it just shifts fantastically on a dime. It's an excellent performance. It really is. And the rest of the cast is not bad at all. I mean, don't get me wrong. I'm not going, oh, the rest of the cast is terrible. The rest of the cast is really good, too. Emily Skeggs as Patty is really good. And that's a tough character. That's a really hard character to make work. And she does. And she does it pretty well. Kevin, her brother's played by Griffin Gluck. He's pretty good. Leah Thompson has a like 2-minute cameo, which is in the part I really didn't like because it's really try hard. But on the whole, it is a solid flick that I don't get why this hasn't gotten distributed. Like, okay, before I watched it, I read the synopsis and my eyes rolled. Like, my eyes rolled so far back into my skull I could only see darkness for like an hour afterwards. How long it took them to come back around. Because there's so many movies that are like, and it's a bleak tour through the dystopian of suburbia. And okay, and sometimes they're not bad, but a lot of times they're just like the same four jokes over and over, and you kind of go, ah, ha, ha, yeah, that's great. Yay. Thank you, superior New York and LA people, for telling us how much the rest of the country sucks. But that's not what this is. This is an absolutely incredible punk character piece. I would put this up there with Repo Man for most punk film. It's excellent. and it does nothing by half measures. It's abrasive, but also delightful and incredibly sweet. And that was not something I expected I'd be saying after the first like 20 minutes. But yeah, no, it's excellent. It's fantastic. It really is. I hope it gets a good release in the US soon. Netflix at the very least, man. I mean, I really have no clue why this hasn't been picked up yet. This should find its audience pretty fast. So keep an eye out for it. It's great.
Yeah, I really, really loved this movie. Like, it's legit right up there with Zola as one of the best things I've watched this year. It's such an aggressive, in-your-face, punk rock little movie, especially that first 20 minutes, like Dave said. Yet it still manages to have a shit ton of heart. Behind the Darkness, it's actually a really sweet coming-of-age movie, coming-of-age romance movie. I mean, as you guys know, I've always gravitated towards films that have, like, aggressively unlikable lead characters. It's just something I personally like when it comes to movies. Kyle Gallner's character, yes, he's a prick. Yet I still find myself loving his character. I mean, it could be because Gallner is just fucking excellent in the role. I've always enjoyed him as an actor, though. He was really good in Jennifer's Body, the small role that he had. He was great in Little Birds. And he was one of the best actors in that awful Elm Street remake. So he's one of the few that I remembered from that movie. Emily Skeggs is great. I don't think I've ever seen her in anything, but she's definitely on my radar as an actress now. I really liked her in this role. I was one of the lone defenders of The Bunny Game when I picked it. I think it's one of the best extreme horror films out there. I knew the director had talent after watching that. And when I first watched the trailer, I was like, this doesn't look anything like this came from the same filmmaker at all. But as I was watching it, especially the opening first act, even though they're like night and day different films, I could still actually tell this is from the same director. Totally different in content and style, but you can tell it was made by the same person. I echo Dave. I love this one. I hope it finds its audience. Someone needs to pick it up on DVD because I can't believe it's not out in America yet. I can see myself returning to this quite often in the future. And when it comes to the votes this week, it's going to be fucking tough. So thanks, Kevin.
Excellent. That's what I like to hear. So bizarrely, as I picked this, because I'd given it a blind buy ages ago here in the UK, it got a decent Arrow release. So I don't know if they'll be able to get it for America or how the licensing will work. So what I'm going to say, though, is that I think I'll probably be rewatching it once or twice before I fully make up my mind on how much I like it. I like it, but yeah, I think that opening was more of a stumbling block even for me than it was for Dave. It sort of feels like a statement of intent, but then the movie brings so much more in after that that improves everything. And the way the characters actually do develop, or the way you learn little extra bits and see them interact with different people around them, makes it a better movie overall. And it's just a shame that you're sort of getting into that after the opener. That's almost just like it's almost trying too hard to show like its sensibilities and what kind of anarchic fun it's going to be. I agree that Gellner's superb as he's in the lead role, and everyone else is fantastic as well. But Skeggs is a bit of a scene stealer, so the two of them work really well together. I don't know if you guys felt the same. I was getting quite a Todd Solondz vibe from this as well.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Oh my god. So Patty is like lifted straight out of one of his fucking movies, dude.
Yeah, like almost kind of Welcome to the Dollhouse, just transplanted to like more now. But not in a way that felt like slavishly adhering to a template or that type. It's just, it's definitely got that vibe, along with, as Dave said, with the Repo Man thing, like more of a punk edge, and it does it really well. So well that I forgot that Remmer had also done the Bunny Game, which I didn't mind, although none of us loved it as much as Tyler. But yeah, I didn't hate it. But
the director didn't love it as much as Tyler.
But I certainly wouldn't have, thought he would go on to something like this. It's such a different pathway, because, you know, a lot of directors that do something as extreme as the Bunny Game, you know, for what it was, would maybe just stay in that niche because they have the kind of fan base that if they like that one film will then enjoy everything else in that vein. So I think it's good that he has come to this, and, you know, whatever he goes on to next, if it's another very different choice or if it's something along these lines, he's just already showing what more he can do. I think it's great. It's a energetic soundtrack as well. It's really kind of in your face, but I felt it in a good way. A lot of that stems from, I think, the little supporting turns as well. Pat Healy and, oh God, I'm going to butcher her name, Marilyn Radscub. So they're the main parents of Patty, if I remember right. Like, they're a lot of fun just in their small roles.
What? Sorry, I was just thinking about the movie and I was giggling again.
I thought it was because I'd murdered someone's surname.
No, I instantly unmuted. I was just thinking about the movie and giggling to myself. I'm sorry.
Pretty much every sort of main dinner scene is hilarious. Just the family interactions of different families are just brilliant. And from being aggravated and just against this main character at the very beginning, you know, possibly, you start to get on side with them. And a lot of that is formed through how he is with Patty, because you see that they both have sort of ways in which they're working well with one another. Simon might start off helping Patty in a way that's, you know, got to rather selfishly help him. But then as you see things move on, you realise that's not necessarily the way it's been playing out, but it is how you perceive it because of how he's been shown from the start. I think it's really good. I don't know how highly I rate it because I want to rewatch it. Because as I say, unlike Dave, I found it a bit more of a stumbling block for that opening act. I mean, I'll just go right on though to keep the Tyler fluids flowing with Zola, if that's all right. Zola. Thanks, Tyler.
Anytime. You're welcome.
For bringing us a film based on a series of tweets. I mean, that really sums this up for me. That's kind of all you need to say about it. Right. Zola is directed by Janisha Bravo. That's how I'm going to pronounce it. And sticking with that. So, she helped co-write the movie based on a lot of tweets mainly by Isaiah King. Taylor Page plays Zola. She ends up going away on a trip with Riley Keough's character Stephanie. They're going to dance and make some money, and it turns out Stephanie is actually going to be sort of working as a sex worker with men coming around. Stephanie is really being undersold by her pimp, and Zola helps her get more from that and tries to help her do better. And there's also a boyfriend in tow, Derek, played by Nicholas Braun, which is really weird because my partner has just started binge watching Succession and Nicholas Braun is in that. So at least I saw another familiar face here, although it took me a moment to place him. Zola isn't as bad as I thought it was going to be. Like, it's not really a terrible film for a few reasons, but it's terrible because, like, let's just not base films on tweets. We had Zola, and then wasn't that a tweeted idea that led to Tusk? This is the track.
Yeah, no, Tusk was a podcast.
Yeah, but I thought it was ideas that came from
that. That horror movie with a Bandcamp girl and annoying guy from the Joss Whedon stuff.
I like that one. You might
that was based on tweets.
All right, okay. Well, I'm shooting myself in the foot there then. Let's just assume we could one day maybe move forward and not base movies on tweets. Because I was reading up on this and they were saying it as if it was a good thing. Like, dialogue in the movie that is directly from the tweets is usually marked with a little tweet sound or some electronic signifier. That just annoyed me when it happened. The tale overall is quite annoying, and like, it's very familiar in terms of the different elements that play into the main storyline, and really it just feels like kind of pointless, you know, because it is. Because it's based on tweets, and it may have been exciting to read the tweets as they were going along, but when you watch it, you're just like, okay, let's wait for this to end. But the leads are really good. I like Taylor Page in her role, and I like the fact that Riley Keough was playing her character in a deliberately annoying and, like, terrible way. She's a bad person. That's how she's playing it. She knows that she's playing it that way, and she's good at doing that. The fact that there were times when she aggravated me so much, I could accept that that was being done deliberately. And, you know, I wasn't there to root for her. The film's called Zola, so, you know, we're sort of hoping that Taylor Page is a slightly more reliable narrator, but they can both just be trying to outdo one another. At the end of the day, it doesn't matter. It's supposed to be based on something that happened. How much of it is or isn't true doesn't matter. You know, it would matter if it was selling itself as that kind of movie. I know it is saying that, you know, it's based on the tweets and these are true, but I think I got the sense as well that they were enjoying being a bit playful with it and just accepting the fact that people experienced this story allegedly as it played out on tweets, and here are some representations of how things could have gone. In that respect, I didn't mind some of the things that were done with the narrative and the playfulness. And I say I liked the lead performances, but there was so much else in this that was just too much that we've seen done better before, or, you know, just felt pointless anyway.
Remember how much I liked Dinner in America? Yeah, that is directly proportional to how much I disliked Zola. Don't get me wrong, there are good things in Zola. There is an excellent performance by Taylor Page. She's great with what she's given. Keough is fine. But then the other two cast members, Nicholas Braun and Coleman Domingo, are fucking terrible. Braun, let's talk about fucking Braun, where he just acts as flat and boring and as if he's in the same comedy throughout, not changing his reaction to anything that goes on in screen. And Colman Domingo, I've seen in other things be fine, but in this, he is truly atrocious. He is the worst pick for this role. Not only can he not do the accent he keeps slipping into to the point that it's comical, but he does not come off as threatening at all. And this is the film's big fucking problem. It's not even that it's based on tweets, which explains some of the structure issues. How everything's just very... It feels like a bunch of little snippets of a story. But the real problem is, at no point does anything feel like it has stakes. At no point does Zola feel like she's in danger. And this is a story that's really fucking dark. And it never goes there. Instead, it keeps it all at like this weird remove. Maybe that's a comment on social media, but if it is, it kind of hurts your film. The whole thing just, it just never feels like it has any weight. It never feels like it has any meaning to it. It's made decently enough. I like Bravo's previous film, Lemon, a lot more, actually. It's decently shot. It's just nothing connects. At no point does it feel like there's any danger or any stakes. It just feels like it's making eyes at it. And this should be harrowing. This should be terrifying. You know, I should care if Zola lives or dies. And at no point do I think she's even really in danger. And then it undermines itself with the opposing tweet bit, which, yeah, it's kind of cute, but it hurts your narrative steam. Yeah, this movie's a miss for me. I respect its filmmaking. I get what they're going for, but it's nowhere near like American Honey, which, you know, deals with a lot of the same kind of things. It's just kind of there. And it's not really, like, if this hadn't been released by A24, I don't think this would have made any impact at all. And it barely made any being released by A24, which immediately gives mediocre movies more credit than they deserve. Kind of there. There's no real reason to watch it. You're literally better off just looking up the tweets. It's a better story.
Well, to the surprise of nobody ever, Zola is actually one of my favorite films of 2021. I really loved this movie, you guys. It's perfectly placed in my wheelhouse of nothing but eccentric, unlikable characters with this total, like, fever dream, social media, Florida sleaze aesthetic. I love that they chose to shoot it in 16mm, too. It gives the film this, like, gritty 70s style filled with neon and these deep colors and glitter. It just visually, this movie looks fucking great. Riley Keough, who is an actress I adore, I would even go as far as to say that she's probably my favorite working actress right now. She's fucking amazing in this role. I mean, you may absolutely despise her character, and that's totally the intent. She wouldn't be playing this character right if you didn't fucking hate her guts. And she fucking rocks it here. I mean, not even joking. This is probably my favorite performance of 2021. Rest of the cast, I thought was really good. Taylor Page is great. I've never really seen her in anything else besides a really small role in White Boy Rick. But she's excellent here. I really thought she was great. And I honestly thought Colman Domingo was fine. I thought his character was a piece of shit, and I thought it worked for him. I could see why some folks would have an issue with the tone, because, like Dave said, it does tackle some super dark shit. I mean, the girl is basically forced into sex trafficking against her will, and it stays in a more comedic tone. But honestly, the tone worked for me. I just really, really love this movie. It's just... it hit all the right buttons for me, and I'm stoked to see what Jenzica Bravo does next. She She has shades of Harmony Korine running through her style of filmmaking, and I'm fucking here for it. So I'm really stoked to see what she does next. I was a huge fan of Zola, and I've actually never even read the tweets. I just fucking love this movie a lot. And now I'm on to Stone's pick, the pick that was picked for Dave to cause him pain. Legend of Hercules, Jesus Christ. The origin story of the mythical Greek hero betrayed by his stepfather, the king, and exiled and sold into slavery because of a forbidden love. Hercules must use his powers to fight his way back to his rightful kingdom. You know what's funny? I actually own this on Blu-ray, and I don't remember ever going to the fucking store to buy it. I was browsing through my collection, and there was a sealed copy of Legend of Hercules sitting on my shelf. I was shocked.
Tyler, you're like, are you sure you're not some kind of, you know, I don't want to be rude to people who have problems, but you're some kind of young alcoholic who has blackouts, and then you wake up and you have like 12 more DVDs in your cupboard that you don't remember.
It's weird because it had a $4.99 sticker from a grocery store that I must have been standing in line buying fucking Dr. Pepper or something. And I said, hey, Legend of Hercules, I'm going to buy this. It had to be in that moment. I just wasn't paying attention.
I wouldn't have spent $4.99.
I had a $4.99 sticker, still factory sealed, sitting in probably Winn-Dixie checkout line. I can't say I really liked Legend of Hercules, but I didn't really outright fucking hate it either. It's just really, really mediocre and forgettable, which for me is even worse than being outright awful. It's just a very bland 300 style knockoff. I've always been a Rennie Harlan defender, but he's really fucking slumming it here. It's got no energy. The CGI is 2002 rendered sci-fi channels of CGI. I mean, it's bad. The CGI is terrible in this. It's poorly edited. The action is terribly shot. It's poorly written. Kellen Lutz is probably the most boring lead to ever play Hercules ever. The dude that played the voice of the cartoon had more charisma. And I don't remember that fucking cartoon from Disney, but I guarantee he was better. I just wish this was as bad as something like Gods of Egypt, because that was so bad that at least I remember the fucking movie. And I watched this shit yesterday, and I can barely remember anything that happened. I mean, there's just nothing here. Nothing. There's no energy. It's just, like, I felt nothing watching it. No hate, no love. It's just aggressively mediocre, and it's something I watched, and I'll never remember. So that is Legend of Hercules.
What's with the Sean Astin dig, dude? Damn.
Was that who did the voice of that movie?
Yeah.
Okay.
No,
yes. Yes, it was.
It was some guy who
dated. It was Sean fucking Astin.
It was not. It was some guy who dated like Jennifer Aniston for about 6 months.
The fuck are you talking about?
For the Hercules the movie, it definitely wasn't Sean Astin, I'm telling you.
Hercules, it was Sean Astin.
No, I'm looking it up right now. I'm looking up the cast, okay? And it's,
Tate Donovan.
I forgot his name, but because I'm pretty sure I remember, like, there's some, I think, slightly awkward interview clip where Jennifer Aniston's being interviewed, and then they mention either Hercules or Tate Donovan. She's like, yeah, you'll be going out, and they clearly don't really know who Tate Donovan is, so just like, oh yeah, hope he's doing well then.
Guy that did it in the TV show.
I never watched the TV show. I'd probably enjoy it because I liked the film.
Well, you know, I had younger siblings. They loved it. Huh. Okay. Well, whatever then.
I thought you'd maybe want to get your anger out first, Dave. I don't mind.
Oh, may I?
Yeah, of course. Been waiting for this all evening.
Shit, it was Tate Donovan in the cartoon series too. See, I just totally replaced Tate Donovan in my head with Sean Astin. I have no idea why. Maybe Sean Astin did it in one of the Kingdom Hearts movies. Okay, yeah, wow, Legend of Hercules. Fuck you, Stone. This movie is just, well, you know, it's fucking everything I hate. It's a huge budget, soulless piece of shit. The cast is just horrific. Like, Kellen Lutz. Now, I've made this joke before, you know, jokingly. They've never felt a human emotion, but like Kellen Lutz is literally a fucking potato. The dude registers like nothing. His half brother is played by Liam Garrigan. I don't think I've seen this guy in anything before. And I know he's supposed to like be a paste eater in the film, but I'm pretty sure he actually does eat paste in real life. The dude is fucking bad. Oh, he does a voice in Greedfall. That's the only thing I know him from. I'm looking at the rest and I don't know. I never watched Once Upon a Time. I will say that Roxanne McKee as his Hercules mom is very pretty. And Gaia Veiss as his girlfriend is there. Liam McIntyre as his friend is terrible. Old teacher guy is terrible. But worst of all is our antagonist. King Amphion and Phytrion, what the fuck ever, played by Scott fucking Adkins. Okay, I love Scott Adkins as a stunt performer. He can do some fantastic fight scenes. Fighting, he can elevate a movie like The Last Universal Soldier. That movie is trash, except the fight scenes are fantastic. And Adkins sells the shit out of them. This movie, not only are the fight scenes trash, there's so much space between them that we get to see him fucking act. And who told you you can act, Scott? Lied to you. Do you remember back in 2013 when folks were going, I wonder who's going to be the next Batman? Do you remember that?
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember how loud the contingent was for people demanding Scott Adkins to play Batman?
Oh, yeah.
They were loud. I've been banned from multiple websites for saying, no, Scott Adkins wouldn't be great. He's really good at stunts, but he's a terrible actor. Tragically, this movie came out after I got banned, or else I could point to it triumphantly and say, suck my butt. Because he's bad. He's fucking terrible. And this should be like an easy, fun role. Just, you know, chew some scenery and be all megalomaniacal, but he can't even fucking do that. He gets these great, cheesy ass lines and he delivers them in the worst possible fucking way. Dude, stop. Stop pretending you can fucking speak. Just show up, punch guys, and go home. Speaking of punching people, the fucking fights in this movie are some of the worst fucking things I have ever seen. I mean, obviously, whoever designed them and filmed them, well, and they're probably currently spending all their time masturbating to the 300. But, like, where the 300, it worked, and you were like, oh, yeah, that looks pretty cool, and oh, the slow motion is okay, yeah, oh, it looks great. Instead, they slow motion fucking everything. And it looks horrific. And the fights are boring and endless and slow. And none of the ideas and choices made in this film are good. Folks have told me over the years that Rennie Harlan used to be a good fucking director, and they are lying fucks. Rennie Harlan was never a good director. He had Gina Davis on his side, who elevated his trash. And when she elevated it, he got other cast members that could elevate it. Without that, he makes shit like this. And this is shit. Pure and simple. This is shit they spent $70 million on. This is just soulless garbage. And why the fuck did they keep CGI-ing shit in the screen? Half the scenes, there's random white fluff just fucking flying around for no goddamn reason. Like, maybe if they were so poor they had to film inside a fucking cotton mill, okay, fine, but there's no fucking reason in the movie. They don't even go, like, you make a sword and sorcery kind of epic to go to pretty places and have pretty fucking scenery, but they didn't. They went to some fucking place that's ugly as shit and CGI'd in poor stuff. Here's a shitty waterfall. Here's a shitty lion. Just go to fucking Italy. Or Greece, and like film where Steve Reeves played fucking Hercules in terrible Italian movies, which are so much better than this. Oh, I fucking hate this movie. I hate the fights. I hate the script. I hate the CG. Like, whoever did the CG in this must be legally blind. And that's not an insult to blind people. It's an insult to seeing people. because I wept tears of blood at the eighth ugly CG shot. This movie is horrific. It's a war crime. And I have called the UN, Stone. I have turned your ass in for this piece of shit. It's terrible. The ending is terrible. The script is terrible. They don't even know the fucking legend of Hercules. Give me the 12 fucking labors, not random Greek dude comes home to fight his stepdad and slow. Like, what the fuck? Like, where are the 12 labors? Where are the feats of strength? He kind of topples something and that's it. Besides that, everybody beats Hercules' ass. How the fuck is middle-aged Scott Adkins beating a demigod? No, fuck you, movie. Fuck you, Rennie Harlan, you hack-ass bastard. Just shit. This movie is shit. Everybody in it should be fucking ashamed. I'm going to look up Kellan Lutz's fucking career after this, because it should have ended. Like, he should never have gotten any work again. And no, he's still working. He's on a fucking TV show. So fuck you too, CBS, for hiring this hack-ass. Fuck this movie. Fuck you too, Stone.
I can't really disagree with anything Dave has just said, including fuck you, Stone. This is, you know, it was really bad. It hurt us all. I wouldn't have minded so much if it was just hurting Dave. I mean, bear that in mind. If you're trying to hurt us all individually, you don't also need to hurt us collectively. You can just find stuff that Dave will hate. It's very easy. This was awful. Like Tyler said, it's also very forgettable. You know, unlike Dave, I am a fan of past movies from Rennie Harlan. God, I picked Cutthroat Island for the show. I'm sure you're still trying to forget all about that. But
not trying. I totally forgot I watched Cutthroat Island, and I did watch it. I talked about it.
And it was all thanks to me. And, you know, I'm not saying that was a good decision, but I remembered it being better than it was, and I have a soft spot for Rennie Harlan. Oh, well, I did, because then he started to go downhill, and it would be occasional films that, while not very good, I was always sort of, well, this is at least, you know, it's not a stinker, it's just not the stuff that I would have preferred from him. But then it's got worse and worse and worse. And you're talking to somebody who really likes Mindhunters and enjoys The Covenant. So, you know, that's my tolerance level. And this was a complete heap of shit. And I also completely agree. Like, I love Scott Adkins. I've seen the videos where he chats with some guys who rate stunt sequences, and he does a bit of his own stuff as well. And he's a really nice guy. Comes over well, has good tales to tell, and he's great usually in fight scenes and can deliver the goods. You don't pick Scott Adkins for a main role that requires mostly acting, because that's not his strength, which becomes clear here. But then he has to continue to act because that's the role that he's given. Like, I probably would have liked this film more if they'd done away with the cheesy family melodrama and made Scott Adkins Hercules just fighting a bunch of people and creatures. Even if they hadn't done the labors of Hercules, if they just dropped him in a big labyrinth and it ends with Scott Adkins punching a Minotaur in the face, that would have been at least some fun. This is terrible. Kellan Lutz is a non-entity. Would you say, Dave, he's like a potato?
He's a potato.
He is. He's terrible. He has no charisma in the role, no good acting chops either for that. So he's not good at all, and neither is anybody else in the film. Yeah, I agree that Roxanne McKee is quite nice to look at, and she does okay with what she's given in her role. She's probably the only one that comes out of this, I would say, all right, but everyone's tarred by the brush. The fight sequences are poorly choreographed. There are moments where, yes, they do want it to look like 300, but it's clear that they have about a tenth of the budget and people. So that becomes ridiculous. And then the weird swishy weapon and moves. That was when I realised that, oh, right, okay, this was obviously sold as a fun 3D movie. Because then you're sitting there watching it in 2D and there's not even that other aspect that might amuse you for 10 seconds. It was awful. I'm hurt that Stone would just throw this grenade in amongst us all just to get Dave. I think we can all agree it was definitely, easily, surely the weakest of the bunch this week. And that's a week in which Dave got to rant about Zola.
Yeah, I got two this week. I'm very happy. I mean, I'm not. I'm in like a lot of pain, but I like to be able to express myself.
I thought the Hercules, I've still not watched the Hercules that had The Rock in it, Dwayne Johnson. And then I thought, well, at least this will probably be dumb fun, but obviously couldn't compete with a film that starred The Rock. That was my thinking going into this. So I was prepared to just hopefully be entertained by something that was a bit silly and lightweight. And it was way worse than I expected. It's the worst thing I've seen from Renny Harlin. And we've all watched Cutthroat Island.
Oh, you know, Lutz was actually in a movie we covered before. He briefly showed up in The Experimenter, which we watched way, way, way back when Craig was still here. He played Discount William Shatner.
Was that the one with Peter Sarsgaard doing the experiments?
Yeah, about the Milgram with I see her face. You know,
the electric shocks and seeing how many people.
I think I think Kieran was on that episode, if I'm not mistaken.
Kieran was on that episode. That was the first Kieran episode.
I thought so.
We watched our first Breen movie that week.
Oh God!
It was a long time ago. It was beautiful.
I don't remember Lutz being in that, because if I remember it, I also quite enjoyed The Experimenter. But Lutz, on the basis of The Legend of Hercules, Lutz would be better suited to doing anything else.
I am all about that Adkins film you pitched, though. I would watch Adkins in The Labyrinth just punching shit. I mean, that would be fun. That'd be better than this.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. But sadly, wasn't to be.
All right, guys. It's that time. You got to pick one. And it's Dinner in America. Please.
I'm going for Dinner in America. And we'll wait on Tyler's words.
Yeah, this is really hard. I've been trying to pick one. I've been going through this whole episode, I've been trying to figure out which one I want to pick. I fucking love Zola, and it's, like I said, it's probably top three of the year for me. But I will give Kevin the sweep and go with Dinner in America, because that movie was pretty fucking special. So.
Yay! That's a big sweep move, that is.
It was a little rough, but I did it.
Against Zola, I was like, wow, this is a big one. And managing for it to be a film that Dave liked as well. I was genuinely shocked when you started speaking about it, Dave. You holding your cards close to your chest, scamp.
Yeah, dude. I I knew how to play that one up. Well, it's one of those things where, like, yeah, the first 20 minutes were rough, but when it really comes into its own, that's when I started texting. It's like, oh, I'll message something to throw them off the scent. Then I had to watch Hercules. And, you know, that just made Dinner in America better. Next week, I get to choose my revenge with a film from Korea called Memories of Murder.
Oh, God damn it, Dave.
Nice.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that for so long, but isn't that about 4 hours long or something?
No, it's not. It's not nearly that long. It's, well, crap, man, I gotta look it up. I don't think it's, like, that long at all. It's, like, two-something, maybe. I think so, yeah. Now, there might be a longer cut, but, you know, I have,
All right.
Criterion Blu-ray, which is 2 hours and 12 minutes.
Cool.
Yeah. Because Craig doesn't get to pick until he comes back. We got to random number generate. And our longtime horror board friend Matt was chosen to pick. But then the message to him failed to go through, and I didn't find out until right before we recorded. So I asked Kelly, and she hates us all and is making us watch the live-action Hellgirl from 2019.
Hellgirl?
Yes.
Okay, well, do you want another pick from Stone that will cheer you up and hurt Tyler? Or do you want me to
wait? Oh, yes, I do. Oh, no, let's...
Okay.
Oh, no, let's not wait.
I'm delaying the pain for myself, and I think Tyler had a good week this week. So this is why I'm just pushing him under the bus now. So we'll be doing Hellgirl, Memories of Murder, and especially for Tyler, this is from Stone, not me, Tyler, so remember what it said, your hate mail. We'll be doing 2007's My Name is Bruce.
Oh, just fucking kill me. God, that's... Oh, man, I was like, is it going to be like Life Aquatic with Steve Zissou? It's going to be something. It's going to be Wes Anderson. No, it's fucking tense. It's intolerable, Bruce Campbell.
Oh, it's the most Bruce Campbell to ever Bruce Campbell.
Oh,
that's beautiful. I take back any mean things I thought about you, Stone.
Oh, that's...
I mean, that's, I was sitting there thinking, couldn't I just watch Baby Oopsie again?
I'm going to be missing Baby Oopsie when I'm watching Bruce Campbell and My Name is fucking Bruce. Thanks, Stone. Jesus.
That's okay. Maybe it'll cheer you up if you give them the business.
Sure. You can find us on Twitter at Raiders of the Pod. We're on Facebook, where I just put up a Riley Keough question. So you guys should answer it, because it's probably going to get no answers, because I'm the only one that seems to like Riley Keough. We're on Instagram at Raiders_of_the_podcast. And we have a YouTube channel where you can subscribe, like, and comment. And you can also email us at RaidersOfThePodcast@gmail.com.
You're so good at that, T. So polished.
Got that shit memorized.
Man, got it down. It's impressive, man.
Our boys all grown up.
As always, thanks for listening. Thanks for joining me, guys. I'll talk to you next week.
See ya.
See ya.
Terrified, cool, drinking water, such a sweet surprise. It's so good, make it warm.